Hello, hello. It's good to see those of you whose faces we get to see. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Lisa Lorraine Smith. I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I am joined by or with Rachel Olhausen, who is a JFS of Kansas City, who was the one who actually thought of having a transportation professionals net group. And when she wrote me, I said, yes, would you like to chair it? And she said, if that's the way it's getting done, okay. So I want to thank you so much for stepping into that role and for, you know, leading these meetings. But before we move forward, I want to make sure everybody puts in their communities so we know where you're calling in from. And it looks like we may have some new people in this group who we haven't met before. I'm looking at Vicky. I'm not sure where she's calling in from. Vinny, have you been here before? I'm not sure you've been here. I don't know who A. Botvinnik is. Who? What's your first name? A. Botvinnik. Are you Alex. There? Alex. And yeah. Where are you calling in from?
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. Well, terrific and welcome.
It's the first time, actually.
Oh, I just didn't know because I didn't know you're first name. I gotcha. So there we go. With that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Rachel to begin.
Well, thanks, Lisa, for all the anchoring that you do for the net groups. So if everybody would, though, I would love to quickly go around, hear from each of you briefly, name and what your role is. And if you aren't familiar with Zoom, if you roll your mouse over your own square in the three dots, you can rename yourself to also share what agency or location you're representing. So I'm Rachel Olhausen. I'm our Director of Program Operations at Jewish Family Services in Kansas City. We serve both Kansas and Missouri. We're on both sides of the state line. And one of the programs that I supervise is our Jet Express Transportation Program. So, hence the relevance of transportation. So I will just go ahead and call on folks if that's okay, so we can go through this pretty quickly. I will go ahead and call on my colleague, Vicky Lightnecker, here. She works with me at JFS Kansas City.
Hi, I'm Vicky. And as Rachel said, I'm with Jewish Family Services in Kansas City. I'm the Volunteer Engagement Manager.
Thanks, Vicky. And Vinny?
Hi, everyone. This is my first meeting. I'm happy to be involved. So I just started with Shalom Austin Jewish Family Service, obviously here in Austin, Texas, about a month ago. And I am helping us jumpstart and pilot a transportation department to help mostly the older population in our community.
That's awesome, Vinny. You'll find, I think, a wealth of knowledge here. All right, Audrey.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am the intake referral and volunteer coordinator here at Fogelman Jewish Family Service at the Memphis Jewish Community Center. And for several years, we have had both a paid and volunteer transportation program. So our Shabbat Shalom our Shalom Shuttle program provides transportation for Jewish seniors age 60 and over, and also for Jewish adults with disabilities. And then our volunteer program, volunteer transportation, is one of the many volunteer roles that we have, and that exists to augment the services that we can provide through the paid service.
Thank you, Audrey. And Rachel Gershon.
Hi there. I hope you can hear me. I'm taking mm-hmm. directory outside my window. I'm hired and work for as the community volunteer coordinator for Jewish Federation of Northeastern New York, Jewish Family Services of Northeastern New York, the Albany and Schenectady JCCs. And so I'm a collaborative hire to find and recruit and train and retain volunteers.
Great, thank you. Alex? Oh, Alex might be on the phone. All right, Linda S. You're muted.
Yes, I'm trying to find the button, my mouse, sorry. I'm Linda Scalzo. I'm a supervisor of support services at the Cummings Center in Montreal, Quebec. The two programs that I supervise are Meals on Wheels and Transportation Services. Are the population that we assist are for older adults. And I've been here at Cummings Center, it'll almost be 5 years, but in this position since July.
Thanks, Linda. Alex, back to you. I see you're
ready. Guys, I'm sorry. I got like six people out on the field, so I got to have to answer the phone sometimes. And I apologize in advance for interacting by the phone. So I represent a Jewish family of Minneapolis. Of the Garber Transportation Service. We provide service to older adults I'm doing this 25 years, maybe like for 40, 35 years. And that's basically it. We drive people all over the county and to medical appointments, mostly medical appointments, I would say 90%. Some other appointments.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Betsy?
Hi, thank you. I'm Betsy Gamberg. I'm the director at JFS here in Greensboro. Jamie Shapiro is our volunteer coordinator, and she was supposed to be on the call, but she's not well today. And she helps coordinate our van transportation services. We have two programs here. We own our own van, and because we're a small community, we can provide that service primarily to our older adults and our disabled population. And then we also have a program called J-Drive, which is our volunteer component of that, where we work with, we recruit and train and hopefully retain volunteer drivers in the community. And before this call ends today, I have a question that I want to make sure, I mean, I hope there's time that I could ask you all, because I'm really interested in some feedback on a particular issue that has arisen here in our community. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thank you. Maureen?
Hi, I'm Maureen Glazer. I'm the program coordinator for On the Go Transportation. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of Jewish Family Service of San Diego.
Thank you. Beth?
Hi, everyone. I'm Beth Feinberg. I'm the Director of Social Services at the Cummings Center. And among the myriad of programs that I oversee, I also oversee the Meals on Wheels and Transportation, which is a volunteer transportation program. That we're having more and more difficulty finding volunteers for. Linda is the supervisor, and together we are always looking to brainstorm for new ideas. And we're very wanted to jump on this call absolutely to hear how other communities are managing their transportation program. And I've heard a lot about On the Go, and I saw them, I think On the Go presented in Atlanta. And I said, this was my dream. I'm really interested in, and Linda and I have discussed this, the idea of doing this.
Thanks.
So thank you.
Yeah, Lisa Galley.
Hi, I'm Lisa Galley with Jewish Family Services of Northeastern New York. I work with Rachel Gershon Rourke. So I coordinate the Project 5, which is our transportation service, 60 and above Jewish seniors, and we take them wherever they need to go. Grocery shopping, any kind of shopping, programming, theater, wherever, doctor's appointments, wherever. I also coordinate our kosher home delivered meals and grocery shopping and do some healthcare advocacy in addition.
Wonderful. Thank you. Tyler?
Hey there. My name is Tyler, and I work with JFS Kansas City. I don't know how to explain my role, but I do work with our Jet Express program. And that is, I don't know, Rachel, did you already explain it?
I didn't go in depth.
Okay, so we have a transportation program called Jet Express, and we have, we partner with On the Go, and we do Lyft and Uber rides, as well as volunteer rides. And we also have a van, and it's for older adults, 60 and above, with some exceptions from one of our pair sources.
Thanks, Tyler. Cindy?
There's my unmute button. All right, since I joined late, so I'm looking at, I'm assuming we're just introducing ourselves, is that?
Yep, quick intro.
Not answering all the questions you just put in the chat.
No, quick intro and how you're related to transportation and your agency.
Okay, so I am a senior director at Gulf Coast JFCS, which is located in Clearwater, Florida, but we cover about half the state of Florida with some of our services. And I oversee our Jewish Family Service programming. We're such a large agency that we've split out that as a pillar so that people know what we do for the Jewish community, primarily Holocaust survivors and food pantry. And we do a lot of shared stuff with elder services, which I oversee. I don't oversee elder services. I oversee our shared grants, and transportation is one of those. So.
Thank you. And I believe last but not least, Sid.
Thank you. And I apologize. I'm going to be probably turning my camera off after our intro here. We are, as probably most of you know, we have a hurricane on its way, and I just transitioned from the office home. And so it's a little crazy, but I didn't want to miss being on here today. but I am the co-director of Rails JFS in Boca Raton, Florida. And I am also the program director of our transportation program called Kibitz and Ride. Pre-COVID, we were a fully run volunteer program. We had about 50 volunteers driving over 100 clients. And currently, I'd say we're about 80-20 with 80% of our rides being covered through Uber health drivers and the rest through volunteers. And big challenge getting our volunteers, new volunteers back and old volunteers transitioned, all of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, did I miss anyone else? Did anyone not introduce themselves? Okay. I think we got everyone. Well, thank you all for being here. So as you saw from the agenda, we today did want to specifically talk about volunteers, both driver recruitment retention, program communication, and maybe towards the end, Betsy, staffing a case collaboratively. That would be exciting. So thanks for bringing that. One thing I did want to mention, part of the impetus for getting this group together, transportation providers, was that through the NJHSA network, we had folks reaching out to us, and then we would send them to somebody else, and other NJHSA members were just asking, like, how do you run your transportation program? Do you use volunteers? Do you not use volunteers, et cetera? Our first order of business as a net group was to create a survey and send that out to all of the NJHSA members who provide transportation so that we could just have at least a some general information for you to use at your disposal so that if you are wanting to reach out to certain organizations, you would at least know without having to have meetings or phone calls, what size are they? Do they use volunteers? Do they use Lyft and Uber? Are they partnered with On the Go? Who is out there? What are they doing? And that way it gives you a little more.
Excuse me, my headphones just died. Can you all hear me? Good. Okay. So it gives you a little more of a peer group to reach out to at first glance. So if any of you have not participated in that survey or are looking for the results, we will get that sent out again, at least at the end of this session. Also, if you did participate in that survey, but maybe you're in a new role, take a glance at your information and make sure that it's up to date, that the point person is still the right point person. So we also have 15 of us, and I would love to know from this group, we have about 45 minutes left. I would like to start out in group session here, but then perhaps open up some breakout rooms to have smaller group discussion based on themes or interest areas. That way everyone gets a little bit of collaborative brainstorming, but also maybe some opportunity to talk with peers or have very specific discussions in this time. As some of those topics come up and you hear something that you're like, I would actually love to do a breakout specifically about that, put that in the chat and I'll start to kind of take notes on that. I believe I can create breakout rooms that you can then choose from. So you can choose by topic, which was a really cool thing. I just found out a couple weeks ago. So how are you utilizing volunteers right now? We won't go around and hear from everyone for every question necessarily, but we heard even in the intros, some folks are having a hard time re-engaging volunteers post-COVID. Maybe a show of hands, or Cindy Minetti, even just the reaction hand, show of hands, how many of you are having that problem, re-engaging volunteers post-COVID or getting your volunteer pool back up? About half, a little more.
More than half.
Yeah. For those of you who don't feel like you're having problems engaging the volunteers or getting your numbers back up, why is that?
What are you doing that's good? What's your secret?
Well, I have no secret. I just started.
So you don't know. You don't know how hard it is getting them back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Vinny, you're launching a program and this is exploratory.
Exactly. Exactly.
Lisa has her hand up.
Yeah, Lisa.
So we got pretty much all of our volunteers back, except one or two, which was great. But I find that more of our volunteers are traveling a lot more. So they're not available. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot more people flying south for the winter or heading to the mountains for the summer. So it there we have, they came back. They're just gone. Super busy and gone. Yeah, exactly.
So you have to get more people to take their place.
Yeah. Right. So it's fine. And that's why we hired Rachel, because she is going to be our guru on that. And no pressure.
For anyone else here who deals maybe with volunteer engagement across the agency or in other areas, not just transportation, are you also noticing that trend that more volunteers are traveling or you're having more seasonal volunteers? Sid, Yeah.
I'm also finding that volunteers are wanting to do things that are more either remote or not. Like, for instance, with our transportation program, they're not wanting to sit in a vehicle or sit in the doctor's office and wait and things like that.
Because of COVID?
Mm-hmm. Still. Yeah.
Well, it's still here, I guess.
Yeah.
One of the things, One of the things we find is that more of our volunteers, they're still with us, but they want to do more one and done kinds of activities than make before. They seem to make more of a commitment. You know, we're available every Monday, or, you know, call us anytime. Now they want to come in, they want to do one thing, and it's much more sporadic. You know, they say call us, and sometimes they can do it and sometimes they can't, but we're seeing this one and done much more frequently than the ongoing commitment that we had more of in the past.
Yeah. I want to put a pin in whenever we talk about maybe how we're advertising or, you know, trying to recruit volunteers for transportation. I'll say, Tyler, remind us and Vicky to talk about how we advertise transportation as like the most flexible volunteer opportunity. But that is, yeah, really, really helpful. Any other thoughts on this kind of current state of your volunteer pool, kind of who's showing up, who's not, hearing some themes about traveling, looking for remote opportunities, some one-offs, which is really hard when you background check your volunteers. You don't want to do a background check for a one-time ride. That's expensive.
Some of ours, we have a, it's a bit of an, we don't have pure volunteers. We compensate them for more than, let's just say, more than the kilometers and wear and tear on their car. And so they're saying that the high cost of gas is a big problem for them. And we're a community agency, so it's very difficult to raise the costs for this program. It's also a program that clients do pay for on a sliding scale. And so we're reticent to raise the cost to the client in order to compensate the increase. So that's what we're at a crossroads right now, where we're looking at all of these issues.
Yeah, thank you. That is a great segue, Beth. I would love to hear from people. One, if you do reimburse or pay your volunteer drivers, and if yes, how much? I can kick off right now. We reimburse our volunteers, and it's 33 cents per mile, but it's only per mile that they have the client in the car with them. So Vicki Lightnecker and I just went through mileage reimbursements and had to follow up with some folks to remind them of that policy, because they don't get reimbursed from the time it takes to get from their house to the client and then from dropping off the client back home. We only reimburse for the mileage with the client in the car. So what are other, Audrey?
How do you manage the paperwork and reporting on that and the kind of to main?
We utilize Ride Scheduler. That's our database, and that allows the volunteers to fill out their mileage. It's very helpful. Mm-hmm. They also get to select their own rides from that portal. And what was really helpful is it tells you the estimated number of miles from start to destination of the client's trip. So at a glance, that's how I knew that our volunteer, there was some miscommunication. A 10-mile ride was getting clocked and they were reporting 25 miles. And so that's where it gave me a note to kind of check in and see if we were both thinking that what was reported was the same thing. But we use a system for that. It's, not an Excel sheet.
So we do also reimburse for the time that the client is in the car with the volunteer at 62.5 cents per mile. We also use Ride Scheduler to calculate that reimbursement. And the one additional thing we do is any volunteer who drives 50 or more miles in a month, we mail them a $25 gas gift card.
I love that, Sid. Easy way to encourage drivership and thank them for that. And you said you reimburse them for the time the client's in the car, but by
miles. Yes. And from the client's home to the appointment and back.
Do you reimburse them at the 56 cents a mile or whatever is
62 and a half cents. It was just raised for us. Cents. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what about IRS requirements?
What, Alex?
What about IRS requirements for that
investment? Alex, you have to talk closer to the microphone.
I believe it's a 16 cents per mile maximum. The IRS allowed.
Yes, 62 cents
the IRS.
Right. Higher than what the IRS is suggesting.
Yeah, I believe that's it. I don't know. It was just increased to the 62.5. So our JFS for staff, we are all using the 62.5.
Alex, it's very hard to hear you.
This was a staff driver. It's not for volunteers. So check it out.
Yes. Sid is, Alex, Sid is saying that they reimburse volunteers at the staff rate.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Whatever.
Thank you. Anybody else, how are you reimbursing volunteers or not? And have they asked about it? What are you hearing from your volunteers?
We don't. They haven't asked, and I'm surprised with the increasing gas costs that they have not. But sometimes I think the way that gets expressed is people are choosier about which rides they will take.
Hey, Wendy, welcome. Do you want to do a quick intro of yourself, what agency you're with, and how you're related to transportation?
Okay. Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late. So I work at JFCS, so Jewish Family Children's Services in Southern New Jersey. And I do transportation for senior citizens who are clients to get to their medical appointments, and also veterans of any age to get the medical appointment. So I'm very strict with medical appointments. Okay, thanks.
And Wendy, what's your last name?
All right. And we just were kind of finishing up. Wendy, do you reimburse your volunteers for their mileage rate? And if so, how?
Yes. So we actually got the idea from this group. And originally, we were reimbursing the nonprofit rate, which was 14 cents. And some people accepted that, but realized it really wasn't doing much at all. So we ended up doing the national, like the federal rate. So yes, we reimbursed 0.625.
Great.
We felt like we had to. We were losing our volunteers, and you know, not all of them jumped on the offer, but you know, a handful or so did, and I think it's worth it to keep them.
Great, Vinny, go ahead.
Hey, so I was on another window taking notes, and someone earlier mentioned that after a certain number of miles, they give their volunteers a $25 gas card. Whoever that was, would you mind repeating after how many miles you give the gas card?
That was me, and it's 50 or more miles per month.
50 or more per month. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So each month, they could potentially earn the $25 gift card.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah, and thanks, Vinny. If anyone is taking notes, feel free to share those out later too. I'm trying to do a little bit of both. Also a good plug for a co-chair maybe next year, would love one. Is there anybody else using any type of rewards or incentive programs for their volunteers, whether it's miles driven, like top three volunteers for number of rides or a number of ride goal? How do you communicate that to your volunteers, or is anyone doing any incentive program like that?
Well, that was one incentive program. Is that what you asked? The $25. So what else is, what are the
right.
other?
Yeah.
I think what this is making me realize is that we are not doing a good job of probably promoting the program coming back from COVID. I mean, really this idea of an incentive program is a great idea. And I think if we got the word out, you know, used our newsletter, you know, our JFS newsletter, you know, to and put some of an idea like that in, I think the publicizing it is probably something we have not done effectively. And I think that would be helpful for us to do. So these are, that's a great idea. And our rate is 33 cents a mile. And maybe we, you know, we need to consider raising that now although I find that it's not really, has not been the financial incentive, although I'm certainly willing to rethink that with the cost of gas, because a lot of our people just say, oh no, don't even bother paying me. That's really not the motivating factor in this, but I think the idea of giving them periodically or setting some, you know, road marks, so to speak, to reward them, to show our appreciation for them with a gift card or something else is a great thing to do. So thank you for the idea.
Yeah, Rachel, Gershon? You're muted. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. I got my cursor over. I'm new. So some of the things that I do is at the end of the month, I'll thank everybody profusely. I call it my love letter. and I'll put in how many people, you know, we served and how many rides. Also, I have for Rosh Hashanah, I wrote out cards and gave them a dollar lottery ticket and a couple of chocolate kisses in there. Also, if it's their birthday, I send out a birthday card and I'll put a ice cream cone gift certificate, thanking them for being so sweet. If they have a Simca, you know, a new baby, you know, anything, I'll send that out. And even though they're little tiny tokens, I really feel like they understand that they're treasures to us, and we really do appreciate them. And they'll say, oh, you didn't have to do that, but thank you. So, and I know that they've had a picnic for all our volunteers. So those are just some shoestring budget kinds of things that we do to recognize.
Thank you. I know one thing we have done in the past is a local car wash has donated free car wash coupons to us, especially because the volunteers are using their car or their vehicle. So that's something that we have sent out to them. And it's nice if anyone has a waterway by them, it's the car wash that you like go through, and then people at the end like dry off your car and make sure that it's, you know, not streaky anymore. It's a nice car wash, usually like a $15 value at least. So a car wash is nice. That's one thing that we have been able to do. Are there any volunteer concerns that you're still hearing on this side of COVID? That's the best way I know how to say it. We're not done with COVID, but we're on this side of it. What are people expressing to you as needs for their own safety? How are you navigating client and volunteer safety and concerns for your program with COVID and knowing that flu season is coming and it's going to be winter again? How are you navigating that or supporting your volunteers? Go ahead, Lisa.
So all throughout COVID, I've highly stressed to our volunteers, passengers and drivers should be wearing masks, windows open as much as possible during the ride, weather permitting. I mean, obviously, if it's pouring rain, if you're having a hurricane and you're driving, you're not going to open the windows. But like I have a moonroof and I open the moonroof all the time. I don't care if it's 20 degrees out. I tell them to bundle up, because we want everybody to be safe. The passengers sit in the back seat on the passenger side, giving as much room as possible to the drivers. I think I'm more worried about it than the drivers or the passengers, to be honest with you, because very often I hear from passengers that the drivers are allowing them to sit in the front seat. Some of them wear masks, some don't. So I push for safety. Not everybody else does. And I can't control that.
Yeah, Wendy.
We also have to verify that the client's been vaccinated. So we have to witness it, their card, and then we have that updated. And if it, and the same with the drivers, all the passengers have to be vaccinated to be approved for the program. And we do ask for proof of that. Not they can't just tell us that they had it done. We actually have to see the COVID card. And I actually have two clients that can't or won't get vaccinated, so they don't qualify for the program. But they are valued veterans, so we offer them Lyft if they need a ride to a medical appointment, and we'll pay for it.
Thanks, Wendy. Mm-hmm. Beth, yeah.
So we just dropped actually the questionnaire, but we had a questionnaire that the drivers had to fill out before they went on their appointment. They had to call their client and administer the questionnaire to their client as well. And if they felt that the client wasn't well, they would let us know and likely we would cancel the trip. We provided all the drivers with PPE. We even got dividers. We insisted that the client had to be sitting in the back seat and there was not more than one other accompanied person with the client. We've since dropped the questionnaire on the other side of COVID, but we still ensure that they both are wearing masks and they must show proof of vaccination.
We have a little bit of a hybrid of some of all of those things, very similar at the beginning of COVID. We provided PuriShield air filtration systems. They're portable and you can put them on your dashboard or hang them on the back of a driver or front passenger seat. They are thicker, but just like a child mirror would hang on the back of the seat, that's where they go. USB plug in and they just, you turn them off and on. And so they are circulating the air. That helped us for all weather. Here in Kansas and Missouri, you get what you get and it's very different and the seasons, they don't really care. So the weather and windows down aren't always an option for us. All of our volunteers and staff have been vaccinated. We have not created a client vaccine mandate. It's not something we were able to do with some of our funding partners as well. It was a form of discrimination potentially. And so we tell our drivers that clients may or may not be vaccinated. You may or may not know their status and protect yourself accordingly how you would like. And we've also told our drivers that they can enforce their rules in their car. On this side of COVID, we also, I'm sorry, I forget who said that you're hearing from the, I think Lisa, you said you're hearing from the clients that the drivers are maybe a little more lax than you are as an agency. Perhaps we knew that that would happen as well. And so we have asked our drivers to give courtesy to the person who's the most concerned. So if they don't want to mask up as a driver, but the rider would like them to mask up, we ask that they respect that and mask up. And then vice versa, that the driver, if they're the most cautious and the rider is saying, I don't need the mask anymore, the driver can say, you know, it would make me feel better. I'm, you know, thanks for masking up in my car. Here, I have some extra masks. And we provide them with the masks to do that. But the giving courtesy to the person who's most concerned has worked really well for us. Gives our clients and drivers choice and voice, and it is their vehicle. They're not impacting anyone at, like, in our staff building or anything like that. So that's, it's worked thus far. Tyler, I don't know if you've heard any on the ground from scheduling rides with our clients, if there's been any pushback on that, but that's been our approach.
I say definitely no pushback. I think that people actually appreciate the precautions and it goes pretty well.
For volunteer recruitment purposes, is anyone actively out in the community recruiting? And I'd love to hear how you're doing that. Who are you targeting for drivership? I know somebody said in the chat, you're looking for younger drivers. And has that been successful? A lot of our drivers are in that early retirement or like late working life stage where they have a lot of flexibility. These are also the drivers that travel. But I'd love to hear from folks where you're looking for drivers and what's worked or has clearly not worked for your region.
I was going to say we've recently attended, which just started back up, some community-wide volunteer fairs. We've done a lot of advertising on social media and other local newspapers. And I would say with all of that, there has not been a lot of success, but that's what we've been trying.
And I was going to say, in addition to some things like that, we've also reached out to our day school, thinking that there might be parents who are working at home and maybe taking breaks during the day, or people who are working, you know, traditionally mother's hours. That hasn't worked out so well either. I'm not sure why not, but it's been frustrating that it has not brought a lot of response.
Does anybody, we used to have volunteers who, I mean, you mentioned like mother's hours or like stay-at-home parent hours. We used to have this as an intergenerational opportunity for parents with young children. They could bring their kiddo along for the ride, and it was great. Now on this side of COVID, we haven't actually gotten really clear on what that means. And so is anybody advertising this, or is this a multi-generational opportunity or volunteer opportunity where the kids can come along? Or is that something that you advertise or encourage? Lisa?
Not at this time, especially with on this side of COVID, I would be really, really hesitant considering flu is going to be big this year. RSV is really becoming very big, and I would not want to risk any of our elders getting that. In the past, our program is called Project 5 after the fifth commandment, honoring thy mother and father. So I always present that when I'm doing any kind of canvassing, looking for volunteers. I let people know, you know, we do this as a way to honor our parents. And in turn, it's not just our parents, it's the elders of the community and showing respect and things like that. But again, most of our volunteers are retirees.
Audrey, did you come off of mute?
I was just going to say what's been most effective in the past, what in terms of recruitment, was really one-on-one recruitment based on personal relationships. But that means that kind of once you work through that initial cohort, you have to start thinking beyond those personal relationships from your synagogue or your own personal friendship group. Now, those people have tended for us to be very loyal. Very loyal volunteers, and they do it out of a sense of mitzvot and out of a sense of connectedness to the center and connectedness to their synagogue. But to have more volunteers, we've got to either, you know, we have to expand those strategies. And I don't know that those work so well as well. We certainly have some younger parents who are volunteers with us, but, you know, our volunteers tend to also be, as yours are probably also, tend to be very engaged volunteers and are also volunteering with their synagogue, with their day school, with other secular organizations, with preschool reading programs, with a number of things. So we're competing with other volunteer programs just to get a piece of them on a regular basis. And there are people who really block out time for the volunteer commitments that they've made. But we just need to figure out the best way to find more of them who are looking for a long-term connection with our service.
Yeah.
Because those are the volunteers who are really the most successful and the most willing to volunteer, especially if it's a long ride or if it's not the most convenient for them or if it's a last minute request. Those people who are very dedicated to the program are the ones that you can count on to do those, to pull things out in a pinch. And also seem to find the most meaning in the volunteer work. Somebody else said that, you know, yes, it's great to give people perks and incentives, but that's not the reason why at least most of our volunteers are volunteering. They're volunteering because it's intrinsically meaningful to them.
Does anybody have a minimum threshold of how many rides the volunteers are expected to provide per month or per year? Or if you're getting a new volunteer, how do you communicate what's a meaningful impact for the time that it takes you to onboard them, do the background check, et cetera?
I would just say our folks have to be volunteering in some way within a 3-month period, because after that point, we have to do background checks and other kinds of things again if they've not been involved with us in any way for that period of time. So even for people who may go away for the summer or, you know, do other things, we have to re-onboard that part of their paperwork.
Thank you.
Yeah, Wendy, and then Vinny, I did see that you had a question or comment too.
Oh, wait, this was a question for Audrey. So you're saying, because we have a lot of volunteers who might go away for the summertime, but we do background checks on all of our volunteers, but the background check is good for 1 year. So I'm just curious why 3 months would make someone go inactive.
It's a policy of the agency, not a policy that I set.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Minnie?
Yeah, so this is a question kind of going back one topic. So let me know if you want to just move on otherwise. But my question for the group is, has anyone gone to like local colleges, universities to see if any psychology or therapy majors would be interested in volunteering? Because the ideal candidate in my mind is like a, 23-year-old who wants to be a therapist for people in the 60 plus age demographic.
So in Boca Raton here, we're very close, just miles away from Florida Atlantic University. And we have a very close relationship with the director of the psychology department and some other departments there. And we do refer back and forth, and we do have many of their students volunteering with us, but unfortunately our transportation program is not one that they seem to be interested in. They do a lot more. We have some technology volunteers and different things like that, that are friendly visitors where they visit one-on-one, but for some reason the transportation program hasn't been one of them.
Gotcha. So if I were to try to grab all the kids from University of Texas, I'd have to make a really hard sell that you're actually giving them therapy as you're sitting in the car, right?
So, and the other thing I wanted to mention is, at least for our liability insurance policy at our location, the minimum age is 25. So for them to be able to be covered under our extended policy. So that's another, it's more of your master's or PhD level student that would qualify.
Yeah, I think also just in general, I'd caution, I hear where you're going, Vinny. I would caution on saying or alluding to therapy being given, period, just because it is, they're not licensed. And it, you know, we don't want to make our older adults unwilling or unknowing guinea pigs on.
Yeah. Right. But it's,
that is true. I think that is the type of person that might be interested. Yeah, our volunteers all provide their own vehicles as well. I do want to make sure this time flew by very quickly. I think it's clear we won't be running into breakout rooms. Betsy, would you maybe briefly share the overview of the question that you had for the group? And then while people are thinking about that, I want to wrap up any final topics, and we'll leave about, 8 minutes or so for your issue. But do you want to go ahead and introduce it?
Yes, and I really appreciate it. And it may not take that long because it may be something that people with some experience can tell me. I have never run into this issue, but when you are hiring your drivers, so we have a driver who's been with us some time, is wonderful, very good at his job, very, the people who ride our van, this is not a volunteer situation, it's hired by us to be a van driver. And he has developed a lung issue. It's not incapacitating to the extent that he can't function, But he's gotten to the point with it that he feels more comfortable, and I can understand this if you ever have had a shortness of breath, where he wants to have with him a small portable oxygen tank, as you know, portable, the kind that you often see older adults moving around with. So I have two questions. One, I don't know whether how high risk is that to allow a driver to have an O2, thing with them?
Are you saying the risk if there's an accident, if the oxygen tank were to blow up?
I mean, clearly it increases my liability, but it's like, is it a little risk? Is it a huge risk? I mean, I don't know if other people who hire drivers have some parameters around like that. That would just be absolutely an exclusion. And the other thing that I'm curious that it started me thinking about was, what's your policies about taking an older adult, either in a car with a volunteer or on a vehicle that you own with a paid driver that has O2, a portable, I mean, they're functional, they're getting in and out of the vehicle, but they have a lung issue. They have some kind of lung disease, pulmonary problem.
So it looked like you had maybe a quick answer. I saw a smile and a nod. Yeah, yes, Beth.
I'll take any feedback because I just have no experience with this.
The first part of your question gave me thought to what we didn't share, Linda, or I did not share with the group, is that I don't have the answer for the client with the oxygen tank. But what we do before we allow any driver into the program is we send a driver to be evaluated by an OT who specializes in driving evaluations. In Quebec, it's a bit of a tricky thing. If she does an official driving evaluation, she must report the person to the driving bureau, and that would jeopardize their license. And we're not in the business of taking away people's license just because they want to volunteer with us. That's between the doctor and the patient. But what she does is a pre-screening test that just looks at areas of capacity. And either says, this person, I recommend the person for your volunteer driving program, or I would suggest you find another volunteer. And it just gives us a parameter, at least to start out with, to ensure that the driver has no visual impairments or mobility problems where they might not be reacting quick enough. And so we would often consult with her if we needed to do that. So if the driver needed to go to oxygen, we would reach back out to her and say, maybe it's time that you reevaluate him. It costs us, the agency covers that cost. And if the driver wants more information about the results of the test, they can speak directly to the OT. But this is a field in occupational therapy that just covers driving. Okay. As far as the person covering, the client carrying the oxygen, never really thought of that one. And so I'm going to call her when we get off the call.
I'll put my email in the chat. So if anybody, in talking to other people in their agencies, has a policy on this or has something, decisions, I would love to hear about it.
Thanks, Betsy. Yeah. And I think really the biggest risk for oxygen, and I don't know that anybody allows clients to smoke in the vehicle, but it would just be no smoking, like absolutely no smoking. For all of our clients, really, I think our biggest question is, are they able to navigate with their oxygen? Because all of our clients have to be able to self-transfer and self-navigate if there are multiple floors, multiple doors. We do a door-through-door service, but if they're going to a large hospital system, our volunteers are not required to accompany them all throughout that hospital system. Like, our volunteers are the transportation. So it's door-through-door for us. But when there's multiple doors, that was kind of how we decided to talk about that, because it was a slippery slope for our clients.
Would you be concerned, again, going back to the driver situation, about your own liability in having a driver who needed that kind of assistance?
I would look like Audrey said about ADA, and I think having that external evaluation is a great, great step. I also would check your liability insurance with maybe your CFO or COO around what you can allow. For us, I know that after 80, for example, we still have volunteers who are driving other older adults who are 80 plus. They have to do an annual physical and turn that in. And then they also have to do a safe driving course every year to re-up their volunteer driver status. But that's only after 80. So there might be other unique aspects. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate the feedback.
In the last 5 minutes, any other final quick questions to the group?
I have to say goodbye and get on a Zoom call with my supervisor's boss, so I better not be late. But thank you all so much for joining me, and I'll email the notes.
Oh, thanks, Benny. Yeah.
Or, thanks for having me.
Glad you made it, Benny.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And so maybe then just to kind of wrap up, please make sure that you review. We'll send out that survey, the survey results. If you have not taken the survey and you don't see your agency represented, please do fill that out. We also ask for things like how big of an operating budget is your transportation program to allow us to compare like apples to apples, or know how many staff do you have that interact with your program? Because it's a lot different. We don't want you to compare yourself. If you are a one-person show and you're doing all of the transportation, that looks a lot different than if you've got a team of four or five people who interact with the transportation program. So just things to consider, please do make sure that's up to date. And then I think any suggestions you have for next year, Lisa and I will send out, this is our last meeting this year, I believe. So we will be first getting back together on February 1st.
At 2.
At 2 p.m., Eastern. same time, 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. But would really like to think about how this group can be a resource to each other, not just during this time, because this hour really flies by. If we would be interested in getting together or having like a peer group for some of those sticky ethics questions, I think something like that would be a really valuable way to utilize this group of colleagues and peers. A longer meeting might be helpful. That's a great suggestion too. So as we're all looking to build up and provide affordable transportation, which is a huge issue, utilizing volunteers or not, would be really glad to get together in that way. So if you've got any suggestions for topics next year, great. Maybe we can have some special sessions as well, or special speakers, and would love a co-chair. We could do more if we did, if I had another brain. It would be great.
Thank you all for coming, and happy holidays. And
yeah, you too. Thank you.
Happy New Year. And thank you, Rachel.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Alex.
Everyone.
You really are a great facilitator. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.